Today on the show, we are transforming and claiming our best life with Amanda Kuda, alcohol-free lifestyle expert. Welcome to the show. Welcome to the Amy Edwards Show. I'm your host, Amy Edwards. Y'all, it's on today. We're going to talk about alcohol, the booze, the spirits with Amanda Kuda. I found her on social media. I'm not even sure exactly how. And I immediately started getting into her stuff and what she does. And I was like, this is my journey right now. And I've been talking about sobriety. Of course, I have a sober partner. And so I am just so excited to share this conversation with you today. I got so much out of it. I committed to being alcohol free at the end. So stay for that. All right. Business up top before I introduce you to our guest, Amanda. Business up top, what do I need to tell you? I need to tell you, please rate, review, subscribe to the show, share it with a friend too. If it comes up or if you've been talking about sobriety with somebody, this is a great one to share with someone. And then you can talk about it too and just explore like what that would be like. And what did y'all think about it? So I'm very excited in the reviews or in comments to hear what you think of this. So you can tell me in the reviews, that would be great on Apple reviews, on Apple Podcasts, or send me a message, amy@amyedwards.com. You can always reach me there, or you can reach me on social media. You can DM me on Instagram. It's Real Amy Edwards, or you can find me on TikTok at The Magic Babe, but it's easier on Instagram or email for sure. So all that said, let's get to today's guest, Amanda Kuda, K-U-D-A. She is so awesome. She's a holistic life coach, a mindset mentor, and a spiritual teacher. She's got a solid 5 years of sobriety under her belt, and she has seen her life trajectory grow and blow up into a beautiful space exponentially over the last few years. So this is fascinating because she didn't even have moments where she didn't hit rock bottom. That's not what we're talking about exactly. It's more of a knowing that alcohol is a problem in your life rather than like the problem. It is a big problem, right? One of her taglines is that you don't have to have a problem with alcohol for alcohol to be a problem in your life. And I love that. It says so much about understanding that we are putting something in us that is affecting us in other ways. And I've just noticed it. So as I've cut back more and more in my own drinking, I've just noticed it. And we're going to talk about it today, that it has repercussions over the next week. And really, she says it takes 2 years to completely detox it out of your body. So she is an expert. She is writing a book too right now called, I believe it's called Unbottled Potential, that's coming out next year. And I am so excited to share this conversation with you. You're going to learn so much about your own unbottled potential if we let go of the societal expectations and the things we do to ourselves and the people pleasing and all the other reasons that we drink, and allow ourselves to break free of old patterns and move into a new space of shining bright. One thing that occurred to me too during this conversation that I didn't mention to her is, if you listened to our conversation last week with Skip Kelly and Kyle Lasota of the Thrive Dojo, they talked about how in our DNA, we are made of photons, and that is actually light. And so it's interesting when we talk about something like alcohol and how it dims our shine. Well, if it's poisoning us essentially and getting into our cellular structure or cells, perhaps it literally is dimming our light. If we have photons that we're made of, then something that's not just a phrase. It literally could be dimming our light and dimming those photons, those light shining molecules that are within us. Anyway, that's an aside. What do you think of that? I'd love to know what you think of that. So without any further ado, or me rambling philosophically, let's get to alcohol-free lifestyle expert and future author, or author now, Amanda Kuda. And you can find her at amandakuda.com or online at Amanda Kuda. That's K-U-D-A. time with Palo Santo.
Yeah, get the vibe going.
Get the vibe going. I like that you're all about, like, you know, all the spiritual stuff too.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So what started my whole life transformation is just like the desire to have a little bit of a spiritual connection and not knowing what that was.
Really?
Yeah.
When was that? What was that?
So I would have just turned 28. And I remember that day specifically.
How old are you now?
I'm 36.
Okay.
Yeah. So I turned 28 and I had started working with this.
You look great, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
I did not think you were 36.
Well, just pretend I'm still in my 20s.
me too.
That would give me so much time to make so many more decisions.
I'd still be very drunk if I was in my 20s.
Oh, same. Yeah. Same. But I started to have this calling towards something spiritual, but I grew up in the Midwest. So very much strict Christianity, very, very close-minded. And I'd never been introduced to what it was like to have a spiritual connection of your own understanding. And I started working with this.
Right. It was like dogmatic.
Oh, super dogmatic, yeah. Very hellfire and brimstone, very unloving and very restrictive. And so religion always turned me off, but I started seeing this kind of medicine man and body worker, and he started slowly like introducing me to these principles. And it was really novel to me, this, you know, young woman in the Midwest. And he introduced me to a book by Wayne Dyer called The Power of Intention. And he told me it had changed his life. And at that point in my life, I was like, you know what? I could use something that would change my life right now. So I went home and I downloaded it. And
why did you need something that would change your life right then?
Oh, geez. You know, I was in kind of, well, that was my, you know, my big transition into adulthood, really. I had just gone through a major breakup. I kind of was at this job that I loved, but I hated because it wasn't paying me well. And it was really just demanding a lot of my time. And I felt like I was just lost. Like it looked like I had it all together, but I didn't. On the inside, I was heartbroken. I was frustrated. I was financially broke. I was just like up to my eyeballs in debt, just trying to keep up with the whole CNBC crowd in the town that I was living in.
And so you were drinking a lot too.
Yeah, totally drinking and partying on the weekends. Because
what was partying for you? Was that more than drinking?
No, not for me. I'm pretty much a goody goody. So okay. I like maybe smoked a little pot, but like, and okay. But never really dabbled into anything else. But don't worry, I hit the bottle and hit the party scene pretty hard. So
you made it count.
Oh yes, I made that count. So 5 o'clock on Friday through whatever time on Sunday, I was going out because it was what I deserved. You know, I had worked so hard and I put up with all of this animosity and I wasn't getting paid what I deserved and my heart was broken. So that's what I thought I deserved to do on the weekend is just
girl,
check out.
Girl, you need a drink. Girl, yes. You need, yes.
And that's what everyone tells us too.
I know.
Like that's what our said. Friends don't have the capacity to deal with our heartbreak and our emotions. Mm-hmm. So they just shut us up with a drink, honestly.
And they've been training themselves to do that too. We've all been like trained from other people
totally.
To do that. Like, let's go for a drink. Mm-hmm. You know, that's our go-to.
Yeah, that'll make it better, surely.
Yeah.
And I thought it did, but it wasn't. It was making it worse and making it to where I was just bottling up, you know, literally all of my emotions and they had nowhere to go. So
you read this, you listen to the book.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep. Oh, and it was hard. First of all, have you read much Wayne Dyer?
I have.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And he's magnificent, right?
Yes.
Super digestible, but for someone who's never dipped their toe in the pond of spirituality, it was just next level. I trudged through it. It took me so long to read this book. I was like cross-eyed by
Plus,
the end.
Plus, if you're not like speaking that language, you know, it's like its own thing. I had his daughter actually on the podcast, Serena, and she was amazing.
So wise.
Yeah. Incredible. But interesting.
Yeah. I mean, you know, when you're first dipping your toe in that spirituality pond, it seems overwhelming.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went from Wayne Dyer. Then I started down the trail of Oprah's Super Soul Sunday. She's kind of like the mass collector of the who's who of spirituality. And I started reading and listening and watching, and I'm reading Marianne Williamson, Gabrielle Bernstein, and all of these kind of powerhouses in the spiritual world. And I'm really thinking, yeah, I want what they have. But I didn't really compute that I maybe needed to give up some of the life that I was living at that point, which again, wasn't super out of the norm for someone, you know, of coming of age, but Friday through Sunday, I was drunk. And that the spiritual scale doesn't weigh out like that. You can't just put in the work Monday through Friday and then all of a sudden do this completely destructive, mindless thing and then hope to be mindful right off the bat Monday morning. It just doesn't work.
You posted something about living a double life, and that really made me think because I'm sure spiritual people do it, but just regular people too,
everyone.
Maybe going to church or
yeah,
everyone can do that, you know, and I saw it firsthand too with my significant other who went through treatment in December, and he was really living a double life. And I had to call it out to him because he was public facing as sober and spiritual and really behind the scenes. I was like, you aren't living this. I mean, I went through our calendar and I was like, I don't know how you're kidding yourself that you're sober, you know, like, cause it's not.
Yeah.
And so we had a, it's just an interesting thing when you actually face the reality of your own actions.
Mm-hmm. And you realize that of all of the things that have gotten in the way, you were number one. Mm-hmm. You were your number one worst enemy. They're your biggest saboteur. And that hurt because it was a lot easier to play the victim and say, my job doesn't pay me enough. And my boyfriend broke up to me and my parents didn't love me the way I needed to be loved. That was so much easier than saying, you know what? The common denominator and everything that's happening is me.
And I felt that way too. You're so right. Yeah. Because I even could look outside myself and say that person's worse than me, you know, mm-hmm. or at least, you know, you feel superior maybe because you're not as bad as or something like that. And you're judging, but really it's you. And I had to stop looking at him. And even my second marriage, I did the same thing kind of. And that was really weird to see my own pattern where I was the one who wasn't as bad or something. Mm-hmm. And I had to get really real with myself and say, who do I really want to be?
Yeah. Yeah. And sometimes we hold on to the fantasy that you can be both versions of yourself. And then you just end up with two half-assed versions and you're not being happy. And you're not excelling.
No. Well, you are half-assed. You're half-assing your everything. Spirituality, like you said. Yeah.
And everything. And for anything that you're doing, if you think that you're doing it to your best capacity and you have anything that is altering your state of consciousness on a frequent basis, I promise you that you could be doing it better. And I kind of wonder what was that journey like for you with, you know, being with your past partners and reconsidering what alcohol or drugs or any sort of substance might be like in your life?
I was a heavy drinker mm-hmm. for almost my whole life.
Yeah.
And not my whole life, but you know, since I was in college, I would say, and that was what my friends did too. Mm-hmm. And I didn't do it all the time because once I had kids, I had to clean up my act mm-hmm, quite a bit, mm-hmm. but I still did it. I still managed to do that. And it was a go-to with friends. I have had to really readjust my social life and how I think about it, which I want to talk to you about today.
Yeah.
And it's still a work in progress. So I like that you talk about elective sobriety, which is where I'm at because mm-hmm. we didn't hit rock bottom and have to go to treatment.
Right.
Right. If someone is struggling with alcohol addiction, please seek medical help because those withdrawals can be real. So
totally. Very important path.
Right. We want to put that disclaimer up top. So anyway, I actually started down a more spiritual path too, which I thought I was, but really once I really got into it, I discovered that alcohol just started to lose its luster. Mm-hmm. And I guess once I did it less frequently, I noticed the effects it was having. Mm-hmm. And I started doing more psychedelics at that time, which now I've also set those aside in my sobriety, but which is an interesting path too.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you can kid yourself that you're being sober when you have psychedelics in the mix, mm-hmm. which is kind of what my partner was doing.
Yeah.
And, anyway, I'm sorry. I don't want to talk too much about him, but I just started to notice the effect that alcohol was having. And it surprised me because now I feel like I have mega depressant effects in days following.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I cut it out a lot, but then I still want to drink. Mm-hmm. And so let's take 2 weeks ago, I decided I had maybe 4 days in a row where I had several things go on. I was with someone or it was a beautiful day or you know, whatever.
That's the worst one. Like, it's a great day. Let's drink instead of enjoying this day.
I know. And so we're sitting outside and I was like, yeah, let's have a wine spritzer or whatever. And just one thing, one per day, which it wasn't much, but it was accumulating over those days. And I felt like shit the following days.
Yep.
Like for about 4 or 5 days, my sleep was fucked up, which of course happens. And I just felt terrible. And I've noticed that. Like if you drink on a Saturday, on Tuesday or so, I'll feel really bad.
Yeah. Yeah. It lingers. And you know what? I would one of the things that I really tapped into is understanding the energetics of alcohol for people who are called to a spiritual lifestyle.
Okay,
right?
Tell me.
And so I can read from you. I'm not like an aura reader or anything, but I can feel your energy.
You
have
good.
I might be, but I just haven't cultivated that gift yet, right? So, and as you start to tap into this spiritual side of you, you start to tap into gifts that you have watered down, right? And so they have been diluted in your system because when you use alcohol, it just muffles the voice of your inner guide, right? It quiets it down. It's like giving your inner guide a tin can with a string tied to it and expecting that communication to be on point.
Why is that?
It's because, you know, in Arabic, I believe the word alcohol is said to mean body eating spirit. So
I've heard that.
Right? It's it's a depressant though. It's if you're going to go just like the DARE definition, right? It's depressing your central nervous system.
That's it, right?
And
depressing your central nervous system.
Yeah. So science, it's depressing your central nervous system, but metaphysics, it's amplifying the voice of your ego, that voice that says you're not good enough. You know, the voice of judgment, the voice of fear, the voice of lack, the voice of you don't deserve this. Who are you to XYZ? And it's diluting the voice of the inner guide that says, yes, Amy, you're capable. You're beautiful. You have these amazing gifts. You deserve a life that is beyond your wildest dreams. You are deserving of all of these things. And it's making it to where you're not listening to the voice that you really want to be hearing all the time.
Why do you think it's doing that? Why do you think our brains go that direction? Is it something about depressing our central nervous system that causes our brains to fall into negative thought patterns?
It's how we're programmed. It's how we're programmed by society to always have your guard up, to always wait for the other shoe to drop, to always be in competition, to always keep your eye out on the other person and have a little bit of judgment so that you can always have the upper hand. That's how we're wired in society. And so we're conditioned to listen to the voice of the ego. So why not drink a substance that amplifies that voice and dilutes that other voice that ultimately just wants you to be happy? And, you know, It's difficult because we just haven't been taught we're deserving of that. You're worthy of being happy and achieving your wildest dreams and feeling your emotions and having a social life where it feels connected and reciprocal. We're taught something else. So how are we to know any better?
Yeah. And I guess I'm thinking too, it goes back to what you were saying about that tin can and a string, you know, like it is putting us more in that ego state and that superficial.
Yeah.
I am something.
Yeah.
Versus I am everything or I am nothing. But that putting us in that I am like a separateness.
Yeah.
Almost, right?
Yeah.
Like taking away that connection, making it sound further away.
Right.
That and makes sense.
It's diluting our potential for achieving whatever we're capable of, be that in our emotional capacity, be that in our relationships, our love relationships, or our social relationships, our career. And I know you've done some pretty amazing things in your career, right? You have a lot in your life. You just have a lot to be proud of.
Thank you.
But what if you did even more?
Who would I be?
Right.
And it's taken me a long time to get to this point. And that's why I'm thinking the fact that I'm with a sober partner is a real gift because I have never experienced that before.
Yeah.
And so I'm really valuing that and what it's teaching me. I heard a quote the other day from Mayim Bialik. She played Blossom in that TV show. Mm-hmm. And I think she has a podcast. Anyway, it's a great little quote. I'll send it to you. But anyway, essentially she said, when you put down the thing, then you find out why you were picking up the thing.
Mm-hmm.
And she's talking about whether it's drugs or food or alcohol, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And that's been one of the most interesting explorations for me. And I'm wondering how that went for you.
Yeah. And it's really special because I thought, just like probably most of us did, that I started drinking because I wanted to fit in, that I wanted to be like everyone else. And yes, but the bigger picture behind that is that I started drinking because I didn't feel comfortable standing out. I didn't know how to be my biggest, brightest, most self-expressed version of self. I didn't think I had the permission to be that version that was attracting attention and fully succeeding and fully embodying everything that I'm capable of. So I shrunk down instead.
Yeah.
And I made myself like everyone else. And that's not what we're intended to do, or else we would have never been put onto this idea path to change our relationship with alcohol. We were meant to be big and be bold and shine bright. And you have to just hold in your heart and be comfortable with holding the possibility that you are meant to fully shine. And when you're drinking, there's some little voice in your head that says, that's not safe. Who do you think you are to be bigger, better, whatever? isn't that cocky of you? Or isn't that, you know, won't people hate you? Or won't people not trust you? Or who's going to want to love you when you're shining that bright and you're being that magnificent? And so we talk ourselves out of it and we dilute ourselves in the most socially acceptable way possible. Mm-hmm. And that's with alcohol.
Was there a part of it too that you just liked how it felt?
I did like how it felt a little bit, but because I thought it was making me be more outgoing. But actually what it was doing, it was keeping me from learning the skills that it took to be outgoing. Because I have the power to do that. I also have the power to learn to relax if I'm stressed out. But instead of actually learning that skill, I learned the fake skill. And it's like bowling with the bumpers up.
Oh, that's good.
Right?
That's good. Well, yeah, because really, you think you're doing great mm-hmm. when you're in it. And then you're sober and you watch somebody and you're like,
First of all, it's not your highest expression of whatever part of you you're trying to be.
My God, no.
Yeah. And you're not, then if you, believe me, if you try to do that thing sober for the first couple of times, you will fumble and bumble. You know, for me, it was like dating and just being flirtatious and putting myself out there. Drinking, it was no big deal.
Because, dating's a big one.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. My inhibitions were down when I was drinking. But then when I had to have actual courage to walk up to someone mm-hmm. and flirt and start a conversation. Ooh, I learned pretty fast that I had not learned how to do that properly before.
And you know what? That spills into a question I was going to ask you later, but I'll ask now
because it
feels like, but sober sex mm-hmm. versus drinking sex.
Yeah.
Very different mm-hmm. and very much more vulnerable.
Yeah. Very vulnerable, a little intimidating, but also so powerful.
Because so powerful.
What are you doing when you drink, but diluting all of your nervous system and sensory.
Well, totally.
Pieces.
I can't even have an orgasm when I'm drinking.
No,
it's not happening.
You are setting yourself up for so much more success in the bedroom.
Yeah.
Well, you have to be a little more vulnerable. Yeah. But Jesus, if you're willing to take your pants off with someone, shouldn't you be willing to be vulnerable with them? Shouldn't that be the prerequisite?
That is an excellent point.
Right?
Yes.
But it's not usually. It's not.
It's not. It's not. In order to get there with your pants off, you've got to like
build up the courage.
Right, liquid courage.
Yeah.
So let's go back to your journey just mm-hmm. a bit.
Yeah.
So what happened then? So you realize that you're living these two lives, mm-hmm. essentially. That's where we were.
It started to hurt. It started to hurt because you're
like
trying to...
Actual pain?
In my heart. Yeah.
Oh, because, in your heart.
Right. It's mm-hmm. you're trying to keep up with two different personas and you've put so much time into one of them. You've molded her and you love her because you've invested time in her. And that was my party girl persona.
Not only that, people expect it of you.
Yeah.
People
you
like,
become that.
Yeah. If you're going out with them, they have something they expect from you now.
Mm-hmm.
Like
mm-hmm.
you to be fun Amanda or whatever that is.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I'm also an empath. So I deeply sense people's discomfort. And I could tell that when I made this decision, it was going to make other people uncomfortable. Right? Did you feel that? Like when
I still do.
Told people? Yeah.
I still do.
You know it
and
brings
I wouldn't,
up theirs.
I just... Luckily, right now, we're in this big phase mm-hmm. where it's way more accepted and easier.
Yeah.
So that's good. But
it wasn't like that 5 years ago.
No.
Let me tell you what. It was not.
It really wasn't. Mm-mm. It's new.
Yeah.
And maybe it's like a swing after the pandemic when mm-hmm. so many people were drinking during the pandemic.
Yeah.
I did not. I weirdly was sober during the pandemic, but maybe it's just that pendulum. Do you think that could be it? Or
I think it's a little bit of that and also some momentum. So, you know, I stopped drinking 5 years ago, January 1st, 2017.
Oh, I was going to ask.
Yeah.
Okay.
5 years. And
oh,
it wasn't.
You did it on January 1st.
I did the dry January thing because mm-hmm. that was easy, right? Like everyone else was kind of not drinking. And then I just added on. And then, you know, but at that point to speaking to like your question about my journey, I was doing like Google in the background, like how to quit drinking when you're not an alcoholic. I was looking for coaches or communities and everything pointed back to AA. Even some of the more modern programs were still recovery. And I was so stubborn that I'm like, oh, recovery, that's not my thing. So nope, that's not the person or the group or the community for me. I always just felt like a little bit of an imposter going into those situations because here... Then I was like, I was a short hair blonde girl. And so I'm like this little bubbly blonde girl going into these places where people have some deep, dark stories. And I was just like, well, I just quit drinking. And that was that. And it felt weird to go into communities where the conversation wasn't, it just wasn't quite, we were on the same path, which we were going towards the same destination, but there was just a little hesitation there. So honestly, and I don't know if you had this same experience, but well, I know you did because you said, you know, you were looking at your partners thinking, well, I'm not as bad as them. And sometimes that stigma around sobriety equals recovery equals rock bottom is enough to talk someone who could benefit from being alcohol-free out of it because, oh no, that's an exclusive club and you have to meet these criteria, mm-hmm. right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's not the truth. You can quit drinking just for the health of it, but that wasn't the narrative 5 years ago. There was no one really talking about it from that perspective, from an alcohol-free lifestyle, from a health and wellness perspective. And so I remember doing an inventory. I went through like all of the spiritual teachers I was following, like Wayne Dyer, Gabby Bernstein, Marianne Williamson. And Wayne Dyer talks about being sober. Gabrielle Bernstein talks about being sober. And I'm like, maybe there's something to this, but they're not quite saying it mm-hmm. the way that I need to hear it, or they're not being quite as obvious. And I just decided I'm going to give it a go and start talking about it a little bit because, you know, I was kind of wanting to share a little bit more of my life. And before I knew it, people were reaching out to me saying, whoa, Amanda, me too. That's how I feel. And asking me to coach them.
It was resonating.
Yeah.
That's, you know, that's one of the approaches that I really like is the way you just said, I'll give it a go.
Yeah.
Is one of the things I kind of talk about when I talk about different habits or whatever on this show. I'm like, what if you just treat it as an experiment mm-hmm. and see how you feel? Like, yeah. What if you just, I don't know, just gave it a go?
Yeah.
Just for like a month. Just yep. for, maybe that's the point of Dry January. I don't know. But, I think it's to dry out actually, but I like that. Just see how I feel because really most of the time we haven't tried it.
Yeah.
The only time I had tried it was pregnancy.
Mm-hmm.
Really.
Right.
And afterward.
And that's kind of a one-sided experiment, yeah. right? Because all the variables are mixed up. You're not really getting a good
And my hormones
feel.
Are all over the place. No.
Totally.
So I mean, I went back to drinking.
Yeah.
So there's a element of it for me that is misses the escape of it. Mm, like, mm-hmm. and I think I've been surprised at myself. Like I still have like a full bar at my house.
Yeah.
And just, I need to just put it away because mm-hmm. I don't know why it's sitting there. And sometimes I'll look at it and think, wow, I wish I just could have a drink and I could, but I don't want it. But at the same time, I'm craving some kind of escape, you mm-hmm. know, or even like, I don't really like to smoke weed, but if I did, you know,
yeah.
And just anything. And I'm doing nothing now except
yeah.
like, you know, breath work and mm-hmm. meditation. And so that I guess I just have to sit with that.
Yeah. It's hard too. And I mean, you know, that like breath work and meditation, well, for me, breath work can be super psychedelic and
totally
super powerful, but it takes effort and you have to push your comfort zone. Whereas when you ingest a psychedelic, it just takes you there.
Right.
Right.
It just takes you there.
Yeah.
There's not effort involved. Same with drinking mm-hmm. or whatever substance you're ingesting.
Yeah.
It just takes you there.
Yeah. And it can be powerful, but it's also cheating if you are able to learn to do it yourself. And, you know, I mean, I really like the conversation you had with Susie Batiste. She's like someone who I very much admire.
Me
and
too.
I think she said something about, you know, I did all these psychedelics and I realized I could just go direct.
That's You're exactly right. We were talking about setting those down and how mm-hmm. that looks for us. And I'm glad you brought that up because I wanted to ask you, and we already kind of touched on it, but how you felt about psychedelics and mm-hmm. all that. But yeah, the point is
learn to go direct.
To
That's
go,
what's
to
more
be
powerful
direct.
And rad than that.
Like, isn't that what we're using those for, to get us there quicker so we can learn to do that ourselves?
Yeah. And I personally, I think that psychedelics, I'm a proponent for them in a healing capacity. And yeah. I very intentionally will use psychedelics, but very, very rarely. And I think, you know, you and I are probably in a similar space right now where there's this big uprising of community that is frequently in the psychedelic space, which is fine. And it's also difficult because I see there's this big opportunity to learn to get there yourself, which is the ultimate, you know, pinnacle for me, is to learn to embody whatever it is you're reaching for on your own. And it's hard. And there is that period that you're going through right now of kind of grappling with boredom, right?
Yeah,
and
maybe that's it.
That's it. Like there's this sense of, I want to escape this feeling or the thoughts that might come up if I don't escape my mind for a little bit. And it's an act of courage to sit through that and do the breath work or do the journaling or even do the next less worse thing, I guess. So like, you know, I would say scrolling social media or binging sugar or, you know, checking out with Netflix are other ways that we do that. But, mm-hmm. and they're still destructive in some way, but I'm not just saying just sit in your house and meditate all day by right. any means. But if you remove alcohol, then at least you can start to like stair step down mm-hmm. the ways in which you check out and ultimately come to a place if you try and if you work at it, where you can sit with those emotions and those feelings and feel pretty badass for doing it.
Yeah. I mean, after the fact, I always do feel like accomplished.
Yeah.
Or like, good job.
Yes.
Yeah. I you said something in there though that I just want to just highlight a little bit more. You said embody the thing that we're reaching for.
Yeah.
That is really profound.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And thank you. It is just, you get to be happy, courageous, funny, sexy, smart, relaxed, stress-free, whatever it is you're trying to use alcohol to do, you get to do that. You can be that on your own. It's just that no one's taught you how. You were given impractical skills. You were given a deficit by your parents who, bless them, were doing the best job that they had.
Yeah.
And by society and whomever else you learned that you couldn't do this on your own from. But all of those things, the only thing you can't do without alcohol is get drunk. Right?
Right.
And so I know that you can do all of those things. You just haven't practiced.
Maybe you can get drunk without alcohol.
Maybe. I don't know.
I mean, I think the Sufis or the whirling dervishes.
Yeah.
Isn't that what they did?
I think so.
I think so too.
Okay. Let's practice that.
We're going to get into Sufism now.
Next episode.
So I'm wondering, like, you saw some really positive things come out of this. People started reaching out and saying, coach me, help me. Did you have any things fall away? I'm sure you probably did. Old friendships, things like that.
Yeah. You know, the old version of me.
The old version of you.
That's number one. But with that, it had some people and some places and some activities that were attached to that old version of me that no longer fit anymore. But I think the really beautiful thing about coupling sobriety with a spiritual practice is I was really able, you know, I'm a student of A Course in Miracles, which I don't know if you've dipped into that at all.
I've tried.
It's I mean, it took
I'm impressed right now. I just bought like the cheat book, you know, here's your short version of it, A Course in Miracles. And I'm like, okay, maybe I can understand that. But yeah, congratulations.
Well, let me tell you, I started to try and read that book before I quit drinking. And you can tell it was hard. So when I stopped drinking, I really stepped into the principles of the course and other spirituality. And it helped me to realize that there doesn't have to be this big, like Real Housewives moment where I like go and, you know, snap my fingers and dump all my friends and tell them how terrible they are and how these friendships are no longer congruent. That doesn't have to be it. So one of the things that I did is I had some friendships. I had actually just moved to Austin when I stopped drinking. So
From the Midwest,
okay. Right. So I moved here and I really had the intention that when I get to Austin, I'm going to change my life. But wherever you go, there you'll be. And I had not changed my life yet. So I started to attract the same exact types of friends. I was right back in that Friday night, Sunday fun day party crew. And I was really nervous because I had just invested all of this time in creating these new friendships and I didn't know what to do. So I just said this prayer to Spirit. I said, Spirit, I'm a little stuck right now and I don't know where to go. Please guide me. Show me how to show up for these friendships. Help me to understand where I should continue to invest my time. And if these friendships are not meant for me, please let them fall away gracefully. And something really miraculous happened, Amy. I had three specific friends who I knew were going to be sticklers. They just loved to get drunk. They were super judgmental. And I knew these three people were going to be thorns in my side. And those three people turned out to be three of my biggest advocates. Now, they didn't change their behavior, but what they did was every time I was around, they made sure I had an alcohol-free drink. They made sure if there was, if we were having an excursion or going to someone's house, that there was, you know, sparkling water there for me. They were constantly sending me links to articles about the sober curiosity movement and mocktails that were coming on the scene. Those three people out of everyone surprised the shit out of me. And I don't know if they would have shown up in that way had I not put that call out to the universe that says, I'm willing to see these people differently. Right now, I'm only seeing them through the lens of my party friends who are just going to be, you know, really hard to deal with. Instead, I'm willing to see possibility. Show me where it's at. And it happened.
Are you still close with them?
I'm not close with those particular individuals. We don't chat all the time, but we didn't have a falling out. I mean, I think one of the things that happened is that was, you know, kind of leading up to 2020. Yeah. And then my quarantine pod didn't quite line up with their quarantine pod because we were doing different things. So that connection just severed on its own, but I could still call any of them up and I'd still be super comfortable hanging out with them. And I think that the way that my friendships transitioned was a testament to how rooted I got in not being judgmental that I'm changing my lifestyle, but they're not. So they're bad, wrong, and evil, but saying, this is a transition I'm choosing to make and it can all be okay. Mm-hmm. And I've called in some really amazing, super aligned connections very, very easily through this journey. And it's just like, you know, when you stop drinking, you elevate your level of consciousness, you elevate your energetic presence, and you start to connect with things that are an energetic match for that. And it just comes to you with ease. If you, you know, you don't just sit there and people come to you,
yeah.
But, you know, if you put yourself in the right situations and in the right mindset and work on your own energy, you're only going to start attracting naturally higher vibration opportunities, people, things into your life.
So I want to get into that more.
Yeah.
But first, you had that, you stopped drinking on January 1st, 2017. And then mm-hmm. that was it. You have not had a drink since?
Nothing. No, nope.
Nothing.
Super accident. I never intended for that to be the case. But
because I was like imagining, like, did you have like one or two times and then you're like, oh yeah, I don't want to do this or anything like that?
No, surprisingly, I kind of kept going and knew that my life was getting exponentially better and better and things were getting easier. And not that I couldn't have a drink right now and be fine, but I just don't want to because yeah. it feels so good. And because I understand that, you know, from a spiritual perspective, alcohol isn't just a 24-hour energetic commitment. You felt it. You were hungover until Tuesday. And it's not just the hangover.
I don't think people realize that.
They don't. Well, you know, I explain it like, you know, alcohol is a toxin. And this is mm-hmm. armchair expert. I am not a doctor or a scientist.
That's okay. Me too. Me too.
Right. So if you imagine your body like a funnel, alcohol is something we usually pour into the top of the funnel at a pretty rapid rate when we're drinking. Mm. But the bottom of the funnel is like a hairpin. So it's just dripping out as it processes the alcohol very, very slowly. So even though you drink maybe a couple days a month or a couple days a week, you still have a reserve in that funnel because alcohol is a poison and your body does not know how to process it.
Yes. So, in fact, there is, have you ever listened to that this podcast Will Kill You?
Oh, no.
It's really good, but they have one on, they usually do diseases. Mm-hmm. It's two women that are like disease experts,
okay.
But they did one on alcohol
Ooh.
And the poisoning of it.
Mm-hmm.
So
Ooh, I
there's
to
everybody's
it.
Reference if they yeah. need the not armchair.
Yes.
The if real. You need the science. So you keep no. talking, but yes.
No, that's helpful because.
This is true.
I mm-hmm. I hesitate to always explain it because I'm like, this is a super wonky explanation, but it's being stored in your body and mm-hmm. in your spiritual consciousness, right? It's just keeping you from showing up at your full capacity and for a lot longer than you would like to think, you know, because it depletes our vitamins and minerals in our body. Some people say it takes like a year or two for you to get back to homeostasis.
For real?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That just gave me a chill.
Right. And I just don't want to fill the top of the funnel up anymore.
No.
That's just because I don't want to experience any of the repercussions. And Jesus, you know, I still do other things that aren't great for my health. But
like what?
I don't have the cleanest diet. You know, I'm not like, you know, having all the clean products in my house.
Oh,
I definitely, you know, consume social media and do things that aren't amazing. But for the most part,
okay.
I got
okay.
the biggest toxin
yes,
and the
did.
Biggest culprit out of the way.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I have friends like that will have stuff going on. And now I've started to ask, like, were y'all drinking? Like, what was mm-hmm. going on? Because I know in my second marriage, like, our biggest fights always involved alcohol.
Yeah, always. And that
always.
Was the thing you thought you were using to connect.
Mm-mm.
You're fooling yourself and not you necessarily, but we fool ourselves.
You can say me. It's okay.
You were doing it too. And you know what? What did that feel like though when you got to the end of the night and you wanted it to be this romantic or relaxing night and instead you were fighting?
I knew. Mm-hmm. I knew actually from the time we got together.
Mm.
And I was like, I think I even said to him once, I was like, alcohol, you know, could be a real problem for us.
Mm.
And it's funny how you can know things.
Yeah.
And then you go like, nah, it'll be fine.
Yeah. Come on, listen to that.
And so, you know, it was a really interesting thing for me to look at.
Mm-hmm.
And now when I've stepped outside of it, maybe not, you know, fully, I need to cleanse for 2 years apparently. So no, I'm really glad we're having this conversation.
Yeah.
I do.
Yeah.
I'm going to do it. And so anyway, now I had a friend recently and she's just always having dating problems and stuff, but they're like so alcohol related.
Mm-hmm.
And I specifically asked her, she's had something going on with someone else and they were fighting, whatever. And I was like, well, you know, were y'all drunk? And she was like, well, yeah, we've been drinking all day and all that. And I was like, right.
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 I wonder why you had a fight.
I know. So, I mean, I don't know. We're just doing these things, but they're having these lingering effects. And it's an interesting experiment for me to see what life could be like without those lingering effects.
Mm-hmm. And realizing that, you know, in my past romantic relationships, when I was having a fight, it was almost always me trying to pin the responsibility on the other person. I was not willing as a drinker or capable of taking radical accountability and showing up, you know, in a relationship, it's not 50-50, it's 100-100. And I was not willing to take my 100, that's for sure. And I wasn't willing to be vulnerable. I didn't know how to be vulnerable. And I used alcohol to try and create some semblance of that. But now I've learned the actual skill. And I know that undoubtedly I am a much more capable and I'm just an amazing partner. I know that I will be an amazing partner for my person, whoever and wherever he is, because I've made all of these changes in my life.
I can already tell.
Yeah, thank you.
Oh, absolutely.
That other girl, I don't know who she was, but she was not going to make a good partner ultimately.
What shifted around honesty for you with this?
Yeah. Like I said, I was really, really tied to victim mentality. It was so much easier to say, oh, this is because, you know, they have it easier because they're rich and their parents helped them out. Or, you know, I have it hard because my parents didn't, you know, X, Y, Z, or that person's immature. And I had to show up for myself. I had to say, you know, Amanda, you're putting yourself in these situations. You're the one who's cultivating the drama. You're the one who's standing for the drama. So what if you chose to live a different way? What if you showed up for yourself in a different way and took radical accountability in all of your relationships? Not that I was going to, you know, let people walk over me or anything, but what if you just said, I'm a part of this too, and I get to control the outcome? And that's
been a really powerful place. Yes, it is. You get to enforce your boundaries. Mm-hmm. And I was just going to tag on to that. No,
yeah.
But I agree. You know, it's not getting walked all over, mm-hmm. but it is enforcing your boundaries and recognizing that you're an active participant.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's so cool.
Yeah, it is. And you know, you are just kind of entering the magic of this space where
I really am. And it's taken me, like, sometimes I kick myself. I'm like, I've been doing all these years.
It's divine timing, always.
It is divine timing. But during the pandemic too, around that time, I started to notice with my kids, like, if I made myself a drink in the evening, my daughter was, I guess, 13, my oldest. She's mm-hmm. about to be 17, but she would just kind of like be like, oh, yeah, you need to drink. You need to have a drink. You know, mm-hmm. I think they felt like, oh, I needed to have a drink to be with them or something.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that a kid sees a drunk parent a very different way, or even a buzzed parent. Mm-hmm. And so that was good for me too. I took that to heart.
Yeah. It's a subtle subconscious message. And you know, I'm not a mother, but I definitely observe all of the mommy wine culture messages that we get from the, you know, the koozies to the t-shirts to mommy needs a drink and mommy needs wine. And that's not a very nice message to send your kids that,
wow, you know
you
what?
Need I, that to deal with them.
You're right. I haven't really thought of it in that context.
Mm-hmm.
It's really not.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's kind of heartbreaking, actually.
It really is that this contract you entered into that now you need to check out to deal with it, which, God bless, I do not.
I have
hats
needed
off to moms. Hats
I have,
off.
I've needed a stiff martini
right?
before after a big crying jag once.
Yeah.
But I remember that specific day and I was like, please.
Yep.
So, yes.
Sometimes it's a tool that you have, right?
Yes.
No shame.
But you're right. I mean, I think as my kids are more able to perceive it and stuff, I've just become more conscious of it.
Mm-hmm.
And that I don't want them to feel like I have to have a drink.
Yeah.
When at the end of the day, we're just together.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Like, my day was so hard and now I need this rather than like, my day was hard and now I get to enjoy my time with you.
Yeah. And you get to model for them. How does mom deal with stress? How does she self-regulate?
Ooh, yeah.
Most of us did not. I didn't get an example of that when I was a kid, and most kids don't. So you also are exemplifying a more enlightened state of, how do I deal with stress? How do I show them what that's like so that they don't freak out when they're all alone dealing with stress as an adult?
What was your family's attitude about alcohol when you were growing up?
Yeah, really interesting. So my parents divorced when I was maybe in second grade, and my mom never really drank very much. You know, she was a single mom, so that wasn't a huge opportunity for her, and it was just never her thing. But my dad, alcoholism runs in the family, and he kind of went down that drinking path because he was blindsided by the divorce. And he ended up in this relationship with this wonderful woman who I really, really loved and adored. And it also happens that she was an alcoholic. And so I was maybe, late grade school, junior high when I got to see this dynamic play out. And I saw this version of a woman who was so intelligent, so capable, so kind, like really outside of the alcoholism, the stepmom jackpot, because she treated me and my brother so kindly and she was really polite to my mom. And that doesn't usually happen. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, wow, this woman is so wonderful. She's intelligent. She's well-traveled. You know, she teaches me things. She shows interest in my life. And then she started to fall off the wagon and it was all consuming. And it was really scary to see because here's this person who you perceived as so amazing. And one day she, you know, this is really sad.
Confusing.
Super confusing. Super confusing. And, you know, one day she took me, we went downtown shopping and I remember she took a big pile of denim to the dressing room. And I'm like, wow, she's really going to try on some jeans today. She had a bottle of vodka in her purse.
Oh my God.
She was going to drink it. And it's not because she didn't want to deal with me. It's not because she didn't want to hang out with me. She didn't want to hang out with herself. And I knew that. I knew that as a kid. It wasn't anything against me, but she endangered me. She left me alone for who knows how long. And then we didn't have cell phones then. So how do you think we got home? I didn't drive. I was 12.
Right.
Right. And so I saw this, but it almost made me rebellious. Right. For the longest time, I decided I'm not going to drink because that's not good. But when I finally decided to step into it, I said to myself, I'm going to drink, but I'm not going to let myself get that bad. And so it was almost like a challenge for me, right? Mm-hmm. Because I knew what bad looked like and I knew that I had the willpower not to be that. And it's really interesting because that's, I think, one of the things that made me so stubborn about it, because I knew I never got to Andrea's state, my stepmom, and she's not my stepmom anymore. But I never got to that state. So I was still doing okay. Mm-hmm. And it was a really interesting, I think we probably all have those observations that if we look at it one way, it seems very black and white. But when we look at the message that we maybe picked up behind the obvious message, it can really shift the way that we interact with something later in life.
For sure.
Yeah.
That's so interesting. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I have all my clients go through that to really do an inventory of how their parents got along with alcohol and what that, you know, imprinted in their mind, because your relationship with alcohol started way before you actually took a drink, because it's in your subconscious. It's observation. And so those were my observations that really, you know, did some toying around with my subconscious and how I perceived alcohol moving forward.
They actually say that stuff starts even way back before, because this is crazy. This is a sidebar.
Nothing's crazy.
Sidebar. Like so you are born with, like, as a woman, you are born with all the eggs that you're ever going to have.
Yes.
So actually, the egg of your mother was in your grandmother when she was born. So really it goes all the way back to that. Mm-hmm. And like, right. So you are carrying all sorts of stuff imprinted in you.
Traumas, if you had any sort of, you know, whatever your ancestors endured. But the cool thing is you can be the cutting edge. You can change the trajectory of that entire family lineage with whatever decision it is that you make, whether that's for you, alcohol, or just becoming a better version of yourself. And that's pretty freaking powerful.
Yeah. I want to just go back to the honesty thing one more time.
Yeah.
And just like what's your relationship now with honesty? Like, do you consider yourself like a fully honest person? Because when you said living a double life, you know, there's an element of like not being honest.
Totally.
In there, right.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
you're putting on a mask to put on a show for whoever you think you're supposed to be.
For whichever crowd you're in, I guess.
Oh, yeah.
So how do you see now? Because you strike me as somebody who's like super honest and
I try to be really
forward and everything.
Honest and forthcoming, but not to the point that it's like brutal honesty. I don't think that's
you
ever
don't seem like that.
Yeah, no. I try not to, you know, sometimes you have to drop a mic every now and then, but I really feel like it's integrity for me. It's saying what needs to be said. And, you know, I have this phrase with my clients that I really appreciate: closing the loop. And that means going back and having a conversation that may be dangling out there that might not be very comfortable. And, you know, maybe this could be also a shadow side of me, like an anxious attachment side that wants closure. But I also feel more in integrity when I close the loop in conversations and when I speak my truth, and not from a point of being right, wrong, or whatever, or oversharing, but just being in my state of, this is what's up for me. This is what's so for me right now. Mm-hmm. And I want to share that with you. And I also think that being alcohol free, because of all of the other things that I've had to be brave about, has caused me to be more honest in those, will have the bravery to be more honest and say what I need to say, and also say it with gentle firmness. You know, mm-hmm. I can show up and be soft, but still stand it. My ground. Yeah, to still mean it and to still have an authority when I say it, rather than I would make a joke about something and, you know, I try to like make it funny if I had a serious conversation, or I belittle the seriousness of the conversation that I was trying to have. And now that just doesn't feel right. And I can't explain how it shifted, but mm-hmm. something in me shifted to where integrity and authenticity and vulnerability were like key pieces of my come from.
Yeah, I can tell. Yeah. I can tell, you know, and it's that whole thing of being who you say you are.
Mm-hmm. you right. know? Well, like, even knowing who that is, who do you want to say you are? And I didn't know.
Yeah.
And I had to find that before I knew how to be honest and vulnerable. And man, it's been a journey, but it's the best decision that I've made in my entire life, because it's created the foundation for every other good thing that's come to me. And that's why I kept going. That's why 30 days wasn't enough, 60 days mm-hmm. wasn't enough, because I could see, like in my little baby psychic mind, the trajectory of what could be. And it looked pretty good. And I could see myself living the life that all of those people I was reading, you know, their memoirs or their spiritual texts or their self-help books, I could see that life was possible. And now I really feel like I'm living it in my own respect. And it feels pretty cool. Like, it just feels good.
Well, let's talk more about that mm-hmm. because you talk about how it makes you a more of an energetic match mm-hmm. for anything that you want in life. So like, how's that?
Yeah. You know, I have this, I have a course and kind of a philosophy that I teach as a platform called Stop Drinking, Start Manifesting. And, you know, you probably read like
I Law like of the title, Attraction. By the way.
Thank you. Thank you. Mm-hmm. I have one of my really great friends, Jessica Zweig. She's a branding
I feel like I know her name.
You probably do. I think we probably all run in the same circles. Okay. She reiterated it to me. She heard me say it, and then she stopped me and confirmed it, affirmed me.
Yeah.
And I'm like, whoa, I'm smart, Jessica. Thank you. And you know, so it's this concept of manifestation has been taught to us in this woo-woo sense of like, imagine a Ferrari in your garage and write the positive affirmations. And yes, those things
the
help.
The secret.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. That kind of like, think it and it will be so. And cool. Yeah, you do need to think it, but you also need to feel worthy of it. You also need to align yourself in life by taking inspired action, and you need to full body be an energetic yes. And whatever I was an energetic yes for as a drinker was not my most fabulous life. And I could feel that. I felt weighed down. I felt cynical. I felt unworthy a lot. And so when you stop drinking, you automatically allow yourself to raise that energetic vibration. And if you put a little extra work into it by doing the energetic things like breath work and self-study and therapy or whatever feels good for you, you start to raise that vibration. And I was never a lucky person. I mean, I never had things come to my life with ease. It seemed I was always really struggling. And that's what I was taught, you know, growing up with a single parent, that you really had to
struggle.
Fight, right? Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, things that I wanted, big and small, started coming into my life just like they were being suctioned to
me. Like what? What's one of your favorites?
Oh, okay. So in 2020 specifically, you know, I've always known since I was like a kid that I was going to write a book. And in 2020, all of these serendipities lined up to where I'm like, well, serendipities, and also, you know, the world shut down. So there was that gave me an open runway. But I had wanted to work with this book coach for the longest time. She used to work at Hay House, and that's like the spiritual, you know, writing platform. And she was brought into my sphere of influence again. So I reached out to her because I wanted her to help me get started in this process. And she said, well, you know, Amanda, I have a course starting next week. Why don't you join it? Her name's Rochelle Fredson, by the way. Total plug for her. She's an amazing book and platform coach. So she coached me through the process of writing my book proposal. And that's the first step to get things rolling. And then the next step is to get an agent. And I really, 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 really wanted the same agent as Gabrielle Bernstein. She's just one of my mentors. She's also a best time New York Times bestselling author. This individual also represents, you know, Dolly Parton and a couple other, you know, people you might have heard of. So it was kind of a stretch for me to submit my proposal to this person. And I submitted it, and I waited and I waited, but I knew, I just knew in my heart. And he reached out, and their team met with me, and then they signed me. So I got my book agent. And then they took the process of taking my book proposal to publishers. And I got one of the top five publishers to buy my book from me. And I never felt anxious. I just knew that it was all coming together. And I worked, I put the work into doing the proposal. I made the alignment, but everything else came to me with such ease that it was almost impossible, super miraculous. And I could tell you 100 other stories of things that have popped into my life.
I don't know what
it is. It's not out yet.
Okay.
It's not out until 2023.
Okay. Wow.
We're still in editing process, but it's going to be called Unbottled Potential. And it's all about achieving your best life through elective sobriety. So
I love it.
Yeah. I'm so excited.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
That inspires me.
Yeah.
Very much.
Crazy.
I'm going to do it.
I never could have or would have done this at the rate that I have had I still been drinking.
Yeah.
In fact, I'd probably still be at my corporate job that, well, it was great. It wasn't for me. It wasn't my job.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's like things are just coming into my life. I've wanted to go on a couple of different trips this year. Here's another one. And three different times people have reached out to me and without me saying anything and offered me their second home. Oh, Amanda, we have a house here. We have a house here. Do you want to come stay in it for a while? Yeah, I do. And these things just didn't happen to me before. And it's because I'm aligning with a different energy and attracting different people. And, you know, all of these things are coming together to culminate into a life that's just pretty miraculous all the way around.
Plus it snowballs too, because you are believing it
mm-hmm.
and then you you believe it more.
Right. And then you see it and you're like, wow, this stuff really works.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I like
crazy.
That.
Yeah. It's amazing.
Well, so how do you get people started on that track when they need to?
What
do you tell people?
I tell the first thing that you need to know, that you have to know, is there will never be a convenient time to take a break from alcohol. And you've seen it. There's always a happy hour to toast, a celebration,
a
sorrow.
This thing or whatever.
Yeah, there's always a vacation or a wedding. There's never going to be a convenient time. You just have to decide that this is a time that's convenient for me to step into my highest self and that alcohol isn't part of the picture. So, you know, you can't keep waiting for a Monday or a new year or whatever. You just have to do it. And also commit to yourself for a sustained period of time that it's non-negotiable. I really like 90 days as a starting point. And in all of my programs, whether it's one-on-one coaching or one of my courses that I offer, I always ask them to shoot for 90 days. Uninterrupted, non-negotiable time, because that really gives you enough time to step into it and get rooted. And if you're kind of flip-flopping back and forth and, you know, trying to do, I don't know, cold turkey moderation, or you're doing 2 weeks on, 2 weeks off, you don't really get the full vibe of what it feels like to have alcohol out of your system.
And that funnel.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. You got that funnel thing going on. And if you can get to that part, but then also understand that you probably, you know, for people like you and I, we don't have a problem with alcohol. Alcohol is just our ineffective coping mechanism. And mm-hmm. so what are the problems under it? And can we use that time to start tackling those problems? Because if we don't deal with that stuff, then we're just going to go right back to the same pattern we were in before. So it's really arming yourself with tools to deal with stress, to deal with discomfort, to deal with anxiety, to help yourself achieve a feeling of being outgoing or whatever it is that you're trying to achieve with alcohol without it in the picture. And if you arm yourself with those tools, it will be so much easier. But, you know, a lot of people just start with ticking the box of not drinking, and that's okay too. That's a step.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you. Yes.
I mean, that's
I'm just sitting here listening like, yes, tell me more. Let's see. Yeah, because one of the things that you said that I liked was you don't have to have a problem with alcohol for alcohol to be a problem mm-hmm. in your life.
Yeah.
It's a good line.
Oh, yeah. Man, I got some good one-liners
you
out there.
You have a really good one-liner. You're like a brand just whiz. It's all working.
Well, it's true. You know, we've told ourselves this story that you have to be an alcoholic or hit rock bottom. And you could also just want a better life.
Yeah.
That could be enough.
You said something maybe in one of your posts or something about playing small and how alcohol caused you to play small.
Mm.
And I guess that relates back to all the stuff we were talking about with ego and other things, but it just made me think.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
How
did that show up for you?
I think just patterns of accepting the way it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mediocrity.
This is what we do.
Normal.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I think that can spill out into whatever else you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is just what we do.
Yeah.
And maybe when you think outside of the way it's been done in just any aspect of your mm-hmm. life, and we're taking alcohol as the example. So maybe when you think outside of that, oh, instead we could go for a walk. We could, you know, go for a hike. We could mm-hmm. do whatever it is, take a class.
Yeah.
I don't know. We could do all these different things together. Maybe that triggers your brain into thinking more creatively in other aspects.
Oh, totally. I've had to get really creative with how I connect with people. outside of the constant norm. So
could you give some suggestions? I'm sure you've got like a list.
You nailed it with some of those. My favorite thing to do with anyone is go on a walk. It just gets your creative energy moving. Yeah. And you're moving your body. And, you know, we live in Austin, so 97% of the year, it's a good time for a walk. And if that doesn't work out, I really like to rig the situation, at least in the early days, in my favor, where we're going for coffee or juice instead of a place that has alcohol. You know, I tell all my clients to do that as well, that you can kind of manipulate the situation and suggest a thing to do with someone that doesn't involve drinking and that actually offers you the opportunity to connect. Because I don't know about you, but at a restaurant or a bar, now that I'm sober, I'm energetically overstimulated and I'm seeing all the things going, the lights, the sounds, and I can't concentrate. I'm not having a good conversation. It stays pretty surface level and superficial, but if we're on a walk or if we're at a coffee shop and we have a minute, oh man, those are some good conversations.
I agree.
Yeah.
It's been my go-to.
Yeah.
I'm like, let's go for a walk. Mm-hmm. I suggest that every time when somebody's like, let's get together, or even for dinner. I'm like, hey, do I have to go out to eat?
Yeah. Yeah. It's a really good way to connect. And I mean, and there are some times when you want to have that intimate, like eye contact moment in time, you know, but more often than not, a walk is my number one go-to. I love it. It's just my favorite form of connection.
Good.
Yeah.
That's mine. That's mine too.
On the same page.
Or at least that's what I've shifted to.
Yeah.
Instead of let's go for a drink.
Yeah.
Let's see. I had a whole like a list of things and we've worked through a lot of that, but I liked playing small. I want to maybe ask you a little bit more about dating and how this has shown up. Have you?
Yeah.
How's that going?
Oh, well, you know, I think that if anyone is qualified to talk about sober dating, it's me because I'd never done it before. I was a super late bloomer, ugly duckling.
You mean you'd never even dated?
I dated, but it had always, I didn't start dating until I started drinking. So all of my formative romantic experiences were supplemented with alcohol.
Oh, pretty much.
First time.
Pretty much
everything.
All mine.
Yeah.
All mine.
Yeah. So I didn't know. I didn't know what to do. And then when I took alcohol out of the picture, I was that awkward 17-year-old girl. She started bubbling to the surface. So I really had to love up on her and teach her to flex that muscle of having a conversation, being connected, being flirtatious. And she kept coming out to play. She wanted to be, you know, she wanted to run the show and really grappling with that inner adolescent.
What do
who
you
was
mean?
There.
What like?
Oh, just, you know, not knowing, being shy, not knowing how to go up to a guy and say hello and introduce myself or whatever. You know, dating apps have really been helpful because it's an endless practice zone. So even though that's not where I prefer to be, like now it's just it's a big time barrier for me. It really was a great practice field because there was an unlimited playground for me to go find people to go on dates with. But I found that, you know, for me, I prefer to date someone who is either a non-drinker or a very conscious lifestyle. They very rarely drink. I don't care if they don't drink at all. But I don't want that to be a big part of their life. So we're not trying to get the party boys who are out there, and try to like save them or change them. That's not the goal. That never has worked out for me. So I try to be more conscious about who I'm choosing and who I'm approaching. But I also know that, you know, without question, I am a better date. I'm a pretty awesome date. And I have better dating experiences when I'm not drinking. And it's created a space for me to flex that muscle and be vulnerable with having conversations and talking about my feelings and sometimes being the aggressor and going first, which if I did that with drinking, I definitely wasn't done gracefully. I'll tell you that. But sober dating is honestly, even if you listen to this whole conversation, you're like, I'm never going to quit drinking. I love drinking. Let me tell you what, sober dating, if you are single, is the biggest power move that you can make because one, you ultimately separate yourself from a crowd of basic bitches. If you're a female or fuck boys, if you're a guy that you show up and you show that you have integrity, that you can spend time with someone one-on-one without being diluted. And I think that that's a huge show of how serious you are about having a relationship. Also, if the person across the table from you could be your person, don't you want to be able to connect with them? Don't you want to feel all the emotions and the feelings that are coming up, even if some of those are nervousness? Like, that's how you know if you actually want to spend more time with a person. And I bet you and I both have spent more time with a person than we wanted because we got drunk and stopped listening to our inner guide.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, you just set yourself up for more success. And even though there's like that little bit of discomfort with having to be truly courageous and vulnerable, you ultimately get a better connection. And I've had so many amazing and wonderful dates. And even though I haven't, to my knowledge, found my person at the time that we're recording this, I've just had amazing dates with people that end so much more amicably, and they're just so much more high value in situation than when I was drinking. And I'm really proud of that. Like, I feel really good about the dating life that I built and who I am as a partner and how I show up. And it's just, is it more difficult to meet people? Yeah, because you lessen the pool, but you're also meeting people who are, and not that there's anything wrong with anyone who drinks, but higher caliber for what I want right now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I like that you used high value in there too.
Yeah.
That's a good term for that. Can you speak a little bit to the feelings that you go through at first when you quit drinking and that you see in your clients and how, you know, to navigate that?
Yeah. So some of those first feelings are overwhelm because you have all of these emotions coming online that you haven't made the time and space to deal with before. So it's almost like, you know, I'm sure if you probably had like told your kids to clean their room and they like shove things in the corner. And it's like you've been shoving things in the corner for decades and now you have to clean it out.
That's a good analogy.
Right. And there's going to be some stuff in there that's attracted a little mold and some dust bunnies and it's going to be uncomfortable.
Stinks.
Right. Or you're like, I never wanted to see that picture of me again. You have to look at it though. And so there's this sense of discomfort with letting those things come to the surface. And if you don't do that at some point in your life, they just come back to bite you. That's what disease is, right? It's untouched feelings, untouched emotions that we haven't dealt with. So there's a sense of creating some time and space to do that, which, you know, a therapist or a coach to help you work through those is really important, I think. And then there's this emotion of the ego coming back into play and overconfidence. And so this is one that I really want to alert people to because there's this sense of, oh, I can have just one, or, oh, I've made it 30 days. I deserve a weekend, or, oh, it's just a champagne toast or whatever it is. And I think that when you're coming at it from the, oh, whatever perspective of, oh, let's just see, or I deserve this. It's no different than you having a toxic ex that was really shitty to you and you guys broke up and you went through therapy. And then you see him at a party and you're like, oh, I should go home with him tonight. Like, it's totally counterproductive. And yet that's what we do with alcohol. We like go back and try to have a one night stand with our ex. And it isn't the best move. We know that. I would never advise you to do that.
No.
Dire circumstances maybe. But, you know, if you've done all this healing work and all of this work to create a new, stronger version of you, I really just want to remind you that when you get in that moment of, oh, I should just, or, oh, I deserve, or, oh, it'll be okay, or, oh, I should just try this, that is your ego speaking and your ego is always seeking to self-sabotage. And if you decide to go back to drinking, I want it to be from a place ideally of alcohol is so insignificant in my life. But the thing is, when you get there, you usually don't want to drink at all anyway. And ultimately, that's my goal for you, to be in a place where it's so insignificant that you're not feeling seduced by it when you're in that situation. And if you're feeling seduced in any way, it's a clear sign for me that it's probably a pause, probably should wait to make that decision until later.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so many times I will go ahead and succumb or give in to that one glass of something, you know, and then like days later, I just need to remember more.
Yeah.
Because days later I'll be like, it wasn't worth it.
No.
The next day I'll be like, it wasn't worth it. I can tell that everything in my brain is not functioning optimally.
Yeah. I wonder if you like catalog really quick, what is usually the deciding factor in having that one for you?
I know.
Is it the people around you?
It just seems like a good idea.
Yeah. But is it usually with people or is it usually alone or is there a
people?
Okay.
Yeah. People.
Yeah.
I don't really drink alone.
Yeah.
I've never been a big drinker aloner.
Yeah.
Whatever the term would be. So yeah, it's people. It's definitely a social environmental trigger.
Yeah.
And even when I don't really want to, I go, you know?
Yeah. I wonder, do you identify as an empath or feel like you?
Sure.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So I'll go down that track then.
That
a lot of times, you know, people who are empathic, they start to sense the feeling of discomfort that they're going to create by telling other people that they're not drinking.
Yeah.
And then you just do it to people please, right?
Yeah.
To make sure that other person is comfortable or make sure that you're on the level of everyone else because either you feel bad for them or you don't feel comfortable being the version of you that's possible.
Yeah.
Right. You don't feel entitled to that in some way. And that's normal. That's normal because we haven't been trained out of that. And the more that you flex your muscle in practicing, your discomfort about me not drinking is about you and not about me. And also, by the way, I'm a badass and I deserve to shine and I'm going to make your life and my life better if I do that, then you start to feel powerful. And then that yes starts to feel like, of course I'm not doing this. Not, oh, I guess I can. It's just practice and
it is.
And being in that space of, I deserve this version of me. And so do you, by the way, because she's pretty awesome.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I want that. I want people to have that version of you all the time mm-hmm. because I just know like you have a lot to give in the world and
totally.
you're not giving it.
I deserve it.
Yes. You're not giving it full force.
Right.
You just can't.
Mm-mm. And I like that you brought up that people pleaser aspect mm-hmm. of it. That's super interesting as a woman.
Yeah.
Which I know you specialize in women mm-hmm. and we have so much of that. And like, I have a lot of that in me of wanting people to feel comfortable. And that's mm-hmm. been breaking out of that has been a big process yeah. for me. And thinking of it in this context is interesting mm-hmm. because I can recognize that when someone else is having a drink, you know, like I don't want them to feel like, oh, I'm the only one drinking, you know?
Yeah. And so you do it with them and so then, they feel better.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
I'll do it just sheerly to keep that person feeling comfortable mm-hmm. even when I don't really want to.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's a disservice to them too, because then they don't learn how to deal with discomfort
That's
and deal
right.
with boundaries.
That's
so
right.
You're like saving the world basically is what I'm telling you.
That's right. Well, so how are you feeling about the current movement? Because now we're suddenly having a non-alcoholic liquor and drinks yeah. everywhere at bars I'll go to. I'll be like, y'all have non, and they're like, oh yeah, we can do any of these drinks yeah. non-alcoholic. And I'm like, what?
It's so wild. Yeah. It's so amazing. I mean, the technology has improved monumentally since I stopped drinking. Like I like you, I still have
maybe
a bar
you
cart.
Manifested this reality.
Maybe. Like it's wild though, because I don't think I did, because I did not plan for it. I got rid of everything on my bar cart. Like I basically have a bar cart there that's just for decor. And then I started being sent these non-alcoholic wines, these non-alcoholic spirits, like non-alcoholic tequila and whatever. And it's pretty magnificent what technology has offered
mm-hmm.
for us to replicate some of these drinks that I thought I would never experience again in my own way. So I've taught myself not to miss it, but now that it's available, I'm like, oh, that's good for a special occasion. I can have my own wine or my own version of a margarita or whatever. But I mean, the sober curious movement kind of is the sober curiosity, elective sobriety, alcohol-free movement is kind of the terms that are being thrown out there right now. And it's pretty rad. I mean, you can find so many people who are being forthcoming and honest and open about their decision to be alcohol-free. And it makes it so much more validating to want that life for yourself when you see that it's possible. And that's all I wanted. I just mm-hmm. wanted someone to show me that you could do the sober thing and still be cool and still be fun and still have a social life and not yeah. be, you know, undateable or whatever else my fears were.
A social pariah
yeah.
because you don't drink.
Yeah.
yeah. It's more acceptable.
Yeah, it's super acceptable. It's like there's tons
people
of
people just go, okay.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it's no big deal. And especially in Austin, I feel that even though I integrated myself initially into the party crew, now that people who I hang out with rarely drink,
mm-hmm.
you know? And so I'm in this cool place of, oh, I don't even really have to explain what I do very often. Yeah, it's pretty rad.
Yeah. And I personally like having a sober partner, you know,
yeah.
and I've told him that I'm like, he's considerably younger than me, but I'm mm-hmm. like, actually I'm a really good match because I've already done all that stuff
yeah.
and
yeah.
I'm done with it.
Yeah.
Like I'm in a good place to live sober with you.
Yeah. And you're able to connect. I'm sure you've experienced
yeah.
him on both levels and I'm sure the connection and the vulnerability and everything is different and better.
It's so much better.
Yeah.
The relationship is so much better mm-hmm. and it's what I wanted and it came about in a really weird way.
Yeah.
But that's okay. That's how it comes sometimes.
Yeah. It doesn't usually come. Things usually don't happen how we expect them to.
They like never do. So yeah. we can let go of that attachment to outcome
mm-hmm.
all the better.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. This has been an amazing discussion.
Yeah, I really enjoyed
it.
Thank
you. Is there anything that we missed that you really wanted to address before we go today?
You know, I don't think so. I think we really hit all the main points of you know, what it's like to live an alcohol-free life. So I will say, just to make sure, I would assume that anyone who resonates with this conversation has kept listening because they resonate with it. But if for some reason you've gotten this far and you're on either end of the spectrum that's outside of this, I would say kind of gray area drinking is what we call it in the alcohol-free space, where you're not an every now and again drinker, but you're also not addicted to alcohol. If you're someone who's outside of that gray area spectrum and you're and this conversation isn't resonating with you, know that there are also other conversations happening out there that maybe will be more resonant. And that the way that I talk about it is not meant to like exclude people who are in recovery, nor people who are, or make people who are every now and again drinkers who just were blessed with that gene that they've never really had an over drinking problem. It's not to say that they're bad, wrong, or evil, or that they can't manifest or can't be spiritual. It's just that I found from the space that I was in, where it was such a big part of my life, that being alcohol free was a better option than letting myself get to the point that I could have been in addiction or trying to moderate, because moderation was just too much effort for me. And this space that I'm in right now, I feel powerful. I feel spiritually grounded and supported. I feel in my authenticity. I feel on purpose, and that feels good. So that doesn't mean that either end of the spectrum is bad, wrong, or evil. It's just, that's not what I'm an expert in. So I tend to talk right down the middle lane.
And have you seen that happen for your clients or people that you've known that have done that? Are like, you see those same results?
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. I mean, I've worked with women in my private coaching practice and in my courses for 4.5 years. And it's just really amazing to see the transformation that can happen when you start to show up for yourself fully and step fully into your potential and really just show up for life in a way that you never have before, and anything is possible.
Yeah.
And I don't mean that lightly or to be like a Pollyanna, but I've seen really miraculous things happen and I've experienced really miraculous things. So it's just, if you feel called to it, it's for a reason. If you have like a whisper in the back of your mind, the back of your heart that says, hey, you should try that, your inner guide does not whisper to you at random. The inner guide is not a carrot dangler. It is an important idea, and you will always be curious if you don't try to live that lifestyle out in some way.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I say go for it. If this is something that resonates with you, you will not be disappointed.
See, we're back to go for it. Just try it as an experiment. Just go for it. Yeah. Just give it a shot.
Yes, full circle.
That's right. 30 days turns into 90, turns into 5 years.
Yeah. Mean, it flew by in the most beautiful way.
Okay, well, I'm going to commit then.
Yes. Okay.
Oh, all right. You want to hold me to that?
Yes, I'm going to check in with you. Oh, okay.
Let's check in. I'll go ahead and commit right now.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to check in that, like, how do I feel about that?
Yeah.
I mean, like, I don't have any plans to drink. So, yeah. I mean, like, it's fine. But I was thinking about my bar at home. I have a bar cart. Mm-hmm. I'm like, why is that sitting there?
Yeah.
I need to get rid of it too, because I do have two teenagers, you know?
Oh.
And so I think I'll just clean it out.
Yeah. It feels good. I still have mine. It's just collecting dust. It's like very, very finely aged tequila.
I have one I can give as a gift, but I think I'll just put it in a box and take it to a friend's house.
Yeah.
That
drop it off, take it for a
has
party.
Has a bar. Yep. Yeah. Or for a party or something like that. Yeah. I'm going to do that. In fact, I thought about it the other day and thought, why is that sitting here? What am I doing? Yeah. Why? Just letting it collect dust. And so, yeah, I'm going to do that. I'm going to go ahead and commit.
Good. Well, I want to know from you then, what is, maybe we'll get to check in at like 90 days. What does the highest expressed version of you look like that isn't being brought forth today?
Yeah. Somebody who really, truly manages their time well and makes enough time for the relationships that matter in a sober and conscious way.
Yeah.
And for myself. And taking care of myself in the best way possible.
Yeah.
And I know when I drink, I eat like shit. Mm-hmm. I sleep worse. It's it's counter to all the things I preach on here and all the things I really love and want to do.
Yeah.
And I believe that I can keep getting better and better and better. And I'm turning 50 in August.
Yes.
So this is a really good time for that. Mm-hmm. So I don't know, 90 days, what April, May, June, July, August. So that's close, you know, like, so yeah. So I'll have a real big sober lead up to my 50th birthday.
Yeah.
Which is wild to think about celebrating my birthday without any alcohol too.
Yeah.
You know,
it's,
but I'm here for it.
Pretty cool. Yeah.
It's really cool.
Yeah.
And a really beautiful thing to show off to my children.
Yeah.
Exactly. Like you said, model to my children. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. And to your friends and everyone, everyone's life around you will be improved by the example that you make, whatever you do.
That is such an interesting perspective too, that everyone's life gets better.
Yeah,
you're an energetic because it's
force.
True. I can feel that. But I mean, it really does, just from our own behavior and things like that. Like, other lives do improve.
Yeah.
Not just our own.
Right. I mean, you could choose to show up and be a POS if you wanted to, but I know that's not what you're going to do. So I know that that is just going to radiate and have an outward effect on everyone whose life you touch. Yeah. So I can't wait to see it.
This is exciting. Yeah. Thank you so much. Thank you for coming and sharing. I'm just so happy to connect. I was really looking forward to this.
Oh,
and
me too.
It just did not disappoint. In fact, it was better than ever. And congrats on your book.
Ooh, thank you.
Maybe we'll have to do another one when your book comes out. I'm so happy for you. And I hope to pick your brain a little bit about that, you know, that book.
Oh, yeah.
Woman.
Oh, of
Rachel
course.
Or?
Rochelle Fredson.
Rochelle.
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, my gosh.
Absolutely. So
plug, plug, plug.
Anyway, thank you. Let's tell everyone, you have a short course and one-on-one coaching too. Mm-hmm. So can you just tell everyone real quick how they can find that in case they're interested?
Yeah, absolutely. I am everywhere on the internet at Amanda Kuda. So that's K-U-D-A. So you can find my website. You can apply to do a clarity call for, with me if you want to inquire about one-on-one coaching. And then right about this time, the time that this podcast comes out, I'll be launching my one of my flagship programs called Stop Drinking, Start Manifesting. So it's for that sober curious or sober spiritual seeker who really wants to get rooted in a spiritual practice, who really wants to tap into energetic gifts that might be coming online and wants to learn how to tap into the energy of being alcohol free and use that to double down on manifestation.
Yes. Amanda Kuda, alcohol-free lifestyle expert.
Yes.
That's just a great title.
I know.
I love it. Yeah. So it's Amanda Kuda. It's in the show notes too. Mm-hmm. And, you know, easy to find.
Yeah.
So thank you very much. You are a bright ray of energy and I just love it and light. So thank you so much for being here today.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Thank you so much to our guest, Amanda Kuda. Remember that you can find her and her course at amandakuda.com. That's Amanda, K-U-D-A.com, or on Instagram at Amanda Kuda. And man, I'm excited. As she was walking out, I was like, well, I guess this is really it. I've committed to at least 90 days, but why not even carry that further? I look at that and I think, that sounds great. Why can't I do that? So why don't I just do that? Right? Do you ever look at somebody and you like feel that little twinge of envy? And then you go, well, why don't I just do it? Those are indicators. As she said, your intuitive guides, those whispers that we feel are there for a reason. And sometimes they speak in that language of like, oh, I want that. And so get it. It's yours. It's mine. For the taking. All we have to do is just do it and commit to it. So that's exciting. Anyway, thank you so much to Amanda. I'd love to hear your thoughts on the episode. So please write them in the reviews on Apple Podcasts or DM me on Instagram at Real Amy Edwards, or you can send me a message, amy@amyedwards.com. And if you go to my website, amyedwards.com, you can sign up for the newsletter too and get notified when awesome episodes like this come out. And too, you can get my Stay Focused and Shine Bright email on Monday mornings. I love you so much. I love you, Alyssa. Thank you for being here and holding down things on the other end of this, the tech end of this. Thank you to Hot Pie, and just thank you to you for being here. And thank you to me for being here. Thanks to all of us for being here, because you shining your brightest doesn't just do you a service. It does everybody a service. It uplevels the world. When you're your best, that's what we're doing. It's what it's all about, claiming that best you. Feels good. Till next time.
Thank you so much for listening. If you liked this show, please rate and review. It totally matters. And I encourage you to spread the love too and share this episode with a friend if you feel called.